To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer, and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. I bring you The Adventures of Alibi Jones, science fiction adventure set in the 2130s, the late 2130s at this point. The Adventures of Alibi Jones continue. But before we check in with Alibi, we're going to begin this installment by checking in on Alibi's former friends, Kitra Fundler Grindler. He's a Dakur, a cat-like Dakur, and Katie Ramsey, his ex-girlfriend. So they're both kind of on the outs with Alibi at this point, but they're both hanging together on the Dakur home planet of her. Not together, but they're both there. So we'll check in with them as we start the chapter. And then we'll rejoin Alibi and his covert ops team. And it's going to be a few weeks later than it was. They've had a few weeks to do some missions and jobs. And we'll see how they're gelling as a team. Or not. That's about all you need to know to get into this chapter, too. You don't have to have been following too long. I think you'll get the gist of it as we get into it. I hope you'll check out Chapter 14 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest, coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. You can find all my books and audiobooks and comics at glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com, MikeLuoma. That's how you spell my last name, Luoma. There's also alibijones.com and vaticanassassin.com. Sites that are kind of dedicated to this podcast at this point. We're also on Facebook. There is a Glow in the Dark Radio Facebook page, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio. And I have a group there called the Radio Activists. I'm on there as well, just regular me under my own name, facebook.com/MikeLuoma, MikeLuoma. That's how you find me on Twitter, too. Just twitter.com/MikeLuoma, @MikeLuoma. On Instagram, I'm Glow in the Dark Radio. There is a mailing list as well. I was just realizing I'm a little behind on getting emails out to folks. So hopefully I can get an email out to you. If you're on the list, and if you're not on the list, well, you can sign up. You can sign up for the Glow in the Dark Radio email list at the Facebook page, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio, or at glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com, or even on the blog in the sidebar. I'll look for a little sign up box on those places, in those places. When you join the mailing list, you get a free, exclusive ebook. The Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life. It's an anthology of some rarities of mine. You don't get anywhere else. And you know, unless you're, you know, into what you're listening to here, you might not even want this. Rarities for those who would like them as part of joining up with this mailing list. Before we check out the chapter, I do have a little bit of book news. Good Samaritan Unto Dust, my superhero noir graphic novella with art by Federico Guillen and color by Ken Lettier, is on sale this month at Comixology. Comixology has their indie horror sale going on, so you can get the 2-in-1 graphic novella for 33% off. They've dropped the price from $2.99 to $1.99, $1.99 for the month. They've also cut the price of issue number 2 by 50%. It is usually $1.99. They are selling it for 99 cents. Again, that's at Comixology. It's part of their indie horror sale. And there's a link to the blog post with the links in it in the show notes. And I'll also have a banner on the website as well that you can just go to glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com and get links to go over there. If you're not familiar, Good Samaritan is Father Bill Sullivan, and this story is set in 1965 Boston. Father Sullivan fights both for better relations with the new cardinal and against a vampiric molester and its demonic shape-shifting familiar. Good Samaritan's challenge? Fight the big fight and still take care of the little things he needs to, as Father Sullivan, the priest. So that's Good Samaritan Unto Dust on sale this month at Comixology as part of their indie horror sale. Now, if you have picked up Good Samaritan Unto Dust, number one, or if you're on Comixology, if you use Comixology, I would ask that you stop over to Good Samaritan Unto Dust, number one, and maybe help out with the reviews. Somebody has given it a one-star review. It only has one review, so right now it's sitting there with an average of one star. I think it's a lot better book. I mean, my story might not be, you know, four star, but I know Federico's art is certainly. And Ken's color is right up there as well. I'm hoping that if you have a chance, you can go there, Comixology, and give that a better rating. That would be cool. Just found that out as I was, you know, going there to get these links for you for the show notes.
Hey, thanks.
That's all for book news. Coming up next, chapter 14 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Hey guys, I'm Ray Belli, the host of Words for Granted, a brand new podcast that looks at how words change over time. Have you ever wondered where words come from or why they mean what they mean? Yeah? Well, me too. In fact, I think about these things all the time, and that's why I've created Words for Granted. It's kind of like an ongoing greatest hits compilation of the most fascinating word evolutions in the English language. Did you know that villain once meant farm worker, or that bead once meant prayer? The bottom line is, if you're a word nerd, let's be friends. You can find out more about the show at wordsforgranted.com and follow Words for Granted on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I hope you tune in to the next show.
Now here's Chapter 14 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio.
I would have a word with you,
Kutra Fundler Grundler said to his father, Rakar Frondler Grundler.
I wish to once again register my disapproval. You have made a misjudgment. You should not have sent Katrafundler Grundler to work with the humans.
In the hallway outside of Rakar's den, Katie adjusted the volume on her translator, turning it up. She knew she shouldn't be listening in. Still, had to know if they were talking about her. Not yet. It was him again.
Oh?
Rakar asked.
You mean with Alibi Jones, of course. Have you come up with another reason I was wrong?
Yes, Kit said.
So then,
Rakar said,
something else besides the fact that, let me see here, what was the first one?
Rakar stroked the fur of his chin, making a show of remembering.
The fact that the only reason for this fraud of a covert operation, as you labeled it, not a real mission team, was that the Kismet affair went public and a discredited Alibi Jones was forced undercover to protect himself?
Rakar asked. He paused for a moment. Kit didn't respond.
Or the second one, he continued. Must have been hard for you to say this. That the Greater Ta are our allies now, and this could damage our relationship with them. Or number three,
Rakar paused, thinking again.
Oh, what was it last time? That the border area over there is controlled by ruthless warlords who have no love for we Dakur. Was that it?
Kit continued to face his father in silence.
Yes, I believe it was the ruthless warlords, wasn't it?
Rakar said, answering his own question, as Kit stood by, mute, glaring.
Each a little weaker in turn, eh?
Rakar returned his glare with the Darkur equivalent of a smile.
"Do you mock me, father?"
Kit asked.
"Not at all," Rakar said. "I have merely repeated your past objections, so that we may move on to your next. Now, what is it this time?"
Kit bristled, the ruff of his neck standing up a bit, spiky.
"You do mock me."
"I do not," Rakar insisted. "Please tell me, I am listening."
Katie shifted uneasily in her seat, frowning. She didn't know the Kismet stuff had gotten out like that. She and Alibi reported it all to his safe superiors after they'd gotten back almost a year ago. That seemed to be the end of it. Everybody said it was an accident. Done and over with. She'd moved on. She made sure her mother and father had both survived, but then had to shut down their repeated attempts to get in touch with her. She didn't want to get involved with them again, not now. She tried to forget about Alibi Jones, too. But Kit often brought him up in some way or another, usually to make a negative comment or point. It was annoying how often Alibi's name came up. It wasn't always Kit. When Kat left to join him, she'd involuntarily had to find out Alibi had received a new assignment. Funny, Kit had been protesting that move ever since. Typical Kit, she thought. She couldn't get comfortable. The hallway chair was a larger one, but still made for the smaller Darkur frame. She hadn't noticed at first how uncomfortable even comfortable Darkur chairs could be. She seemed to be noticing more and more little things bothering her about the planet. "Maybe it's time," she said to herself, and missed the start of Kit's answer.
"Diplomatic Darkur acting as a commercial Darkur. You allowing Katra von LeGrundler to work for Alibi Jones is disgracing our family."
"What?" Katie didn't realize she'd said it out loud, but both Kit and Rakar now stood in the doorway looking at her. "Sorry," she said. "I overheard you."
"That is quite all right," Rakar said.
He sounded extremely loud in her ears, but she couldn't turn the translator's volume back down inconspicuously while the two stood right in front of her.
"I was about to ask him the same thing."
Kit didn't say anything. "That's dumb, Kit," Katie said. "And it can't be true. If he's going by your family name, he's not doing a very good job of staying undercover."
"Well, yes," Rakar said. "He is calling himself Katra von LeGrundler. But he is pretending to have gone rogue and run away. That is his cover. He must. He cannot hide that he is from a diplomatic family now, can he?"
"He can't?" Katie asked.
"No," Rakar said.
He seemed puzzled by her reaction.
"He cannot," Kit said. "You humans have not bothered to learn the difference."
"Yet," Katie said, sticking up for humankind. "Come on, Kit. You know subtle stuff like that takes time to learn."
"If one bothers to actually try," Kit said. "Each of our divisions has its own unique skull structure," Rakar said to Katie. "Our color patterns are also different. Some coloring is shared, but others are exclusive to division."
"Okay," Katie said. "That's a couple things. We'll learn."
"Some of you may, in time, as you say," Rakar said. "No matter. As Katra von LeGrundler is supposed to be a rogue diplomatic Darkur acting as a commercial Darkur, that is his cover. It sounds to me like he is doing his job. It reflects no disgrace upon our family, Kit."
"What if they find out he has not truly gone rogue?"
Kit asked.
"What if the humans grow fur?" Rakar asked. "Now I am mocking you."
Kit glared back at his father. Katie tried to defuse the situation. "Hey, I heard that other thing. Sorry, I couldn't help it. Is it true?" she asked them. "Did they tell everybody? Alibi blew up Kismet? Really?"
"They did," Kit said.
"I am afraid the Kismet affair is now common knowledge," Rakar said. "The new human leader, Nico Constantine, seems to have a vendetta against Alibi Jones."
"He's not the only one," Katie cracked as she glared at Kit.
"I no longer care about Alibi Jones," Kit said.
He looked away from Katie's glare and away from Rakar. But Rakar was watching him.
"That is why you were just bringing him up, eh?" Rakar said. "And why you have told me something about him once a month, every month, since Catrafundler Grundler left.
I bring up what I believe to be an incorrect decision, Kit said. I cannot help that he is the human involved.
You've really got to give this up, Kit, Katie said. After all, he did risk his life to rescue you, us, from Kismet. That should be worth something.
I did not ask to be rescued, Kit said.
Katie stared at him for a moment. I give up, she said.
I am reminded, Rakar said, that someone is still atoning for his actions in the Kismet affair. Kitrafundler Grundler, don't you have some records work to do in the basement?
As if the air was let out of him, Kit crumpled a bit.
Indeed,
Kit said. He bowed to Rakar, gave Katie a nod, and then turned and walked away from them down the hall. How long does he have to atone for? Katie asked, as she watched him slink away. It's been a long time.
I will tell him when he is done, Rakar said.
Oh.
But part of what he is atoning for is his attitude, Rakar told her. And that has not yet changed.
He looked down the now empty hall. Katie reached up behind her head to the nape of her neck and turned down the volume on her translator. Rakar turned back.
Was there something you wanted to see me about? He asked.
You know, maybe there is, Rakar. I was thinking it might be time for me to move on. Running cargo again? Alibi sighed as he scrolled down the readout. Brisby shrugged.
Don't know what's on the crystals, Alibi, Brisby said. I'll just transport them to you.
Alibi resisted the urge to punch Brisby as he stood there in front of him, smiling a smarmy smile. And all we're transporting these days are shipments of industrial parts and other worthless cargoes, Alibi said.
They are not worthless to those colonies who require the parts to live,
Cat observed. Alibi, Brisby, Emily, and Cat were in Alibi's office on the base. Alibi had the secure communications unit out on his desk, where it displayed the crystal's message. Emily leaned over Alibi's shoulder to get the details on the cargo run from the display. I'm getting tired of this, Alibi declared. Emily backed up at his volume.
Gotta establish our cover, Brisby offered.
And 5 weeks' worth of milk runs hasn't done that? No one answered his rhetorical question. They'd taught Alibi during his brief covert ops coursework that the key to a good cover story was establishing a public presence with that cover. Thus, if you were going to pretend to be a freelance cargo hauler in the human colony worlds beyond the Solar Alliance, out past the Border World Depot, you have to haul cargo. And that's all they'd been doing now, for over a month. Most of their runs were Solar Alliance cargoes, their missions. But Alibi and his team had also been trying to drum up business for themselves. Emily proved a good choice as business manager. She made calls, placed ads in spaceports around the fringe, got the word out about the AD Foster and their new service. Cat was a competent co-pilot, kept to himself during most of their downtime. Brisby didn't stick around the base much, but he wasn't supposed to. He'd give Alibi the crew's next assignment and then take off on a Stinger ship that stopped in for a quick visit. Or he'd ride with them on the cruiser and jump off when they transferred cargo at a busy port. He wouldn't have left Argentium with them if the place hadn't been falling apart. Alibi hadn't considered leaving Brisby behind. That was early on. These days,
now that I know the man a bit,
I might reconsider. Alibi found Brisby's family claims tedious, the man himself arrogant and overbearing. But Brisby did bring them their safe assignment crystals, and their safe financing, for now, made him bearable. After the success of their high-risk first mission and job, the safe made it easier to look like they were in business by supplying them with cash payroll payments and mission support. Alibi and his crew needed the help as they struggled to establish themselves. The safe kept them busy, too, supplementing their paltry two, so far, regular freight hauling contracts with another three missions, little more than glorified low-risk cargo runs. Eventually, the safe would cut their purse strings. For their deep cover to be convincing, Alibi and his crew had to live the life and make their own living, expected still, of course, to remain available if their team was needed by the safe. But not yet.
I'm supposed to ride with you to Depot this time, Brisby said. Not sure what you're picking up, but I guess you're heading back there first. They said you'd drop me off. Got passage booked on another ship out of Depot, heading back into the solar system. Alibi looked up at Emily.
You get what you need?
Yup, she said. It was, very, entertaining. She smirked. Alibi read through the message.
No real need to send this covertly.
We're picking up a shipment of entertainment units on Depot, Alibi told Kat and Brisby. They're bound for Kerry, a small colony world out in the expanses.
More fun and excitement, Kat said, displaying his growing fondness for sarcasm, a trait he was picking up from Emily.
Aren't you sad you're going to miss our trip out to Kerry? Alibi asked Brisby.
You'll miss all the fun and excitement.
Must head back to Ceres Central for some reason, Brisby said. Maybe it's to pick up a more important assignment, he offered, trying to sound optimistic.
Let's hope so, Alibi said.
He frowned. When I went covert ops, thought I would actually be doing more ops. The trip to Depot was a routine run. Cargo pickup went off without a hitch. Emily handled the transfer details like an old pro. Brisby dropped out of sight at some point, off to Ceres. Alibi didn't notice him leave the ship. The A.D. Foster was soon underway without him, queuing up at the Depot transbase point to head out to Kerry. They flashed out of transbase close to Kerry, a small blue-green world orbiting a yellow star, the type that usually attracted human colonists. Alibi knew from some quick research they'd founded the colony about 10 years ago. Terraforming operations remained underway, helping the inhabitants carve out a basic existence. Some small-scale farming operations were managing to succeed, but the world needed to ship in most of the foods its people ate, clothes they wore, most other goods they used as well. Made for a busy spaceport on the small planet. The Foster made good time, ground control directing them down into a landing bay with no delays. With all its traffic, Kerry's port was a finely run machine, fast and efficient. Upon touchdown, Alibi exited the ship to find two of Kerry's government agents waiting for them, a squad of troopers standing by. No one was armed. They were there for the offloading. They quickly went to work. Alibi sighed. He leaned against the side of the ship and watched the colonial government's troops carry off the cargo, his checked-off bill of lading in hand.
Boring.
Excuse me. An older, well-dressed, gray-haired gentleman called over to Alibi as he approached the cruiser. Are you Alibi Jones?
Depends on who's asking, Alibi said.
The older man extended his hand.
Name's Billy, the man said. Billy Gentry.
That was Chapter 14 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. Billy Gentry?
Uh-oh.
Alibi was warned about him. Kind of the godfather of the Depot Fringe, according to Laurel Eden. And he's just said hello to Alibi Jones. Hello, Alibi. This is an important moment. So I hope you'll be back next episode as Alibi Jones meets Billy Gentry. The two gentlemen get to talking in Chapter 15 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. A reminder, Good Samaritan Unto Dust, my superhero noir graphic novella, with art by Federico Guillen and color by Ken Lettier, is on sale this month at Comixology. And there are links in the show notes for that, or just go to comixology.com and look for Good Samaritan Unto Dust. It's part of their indie horror sale that's going on this month. A reminder, if you like the book you're listening to, Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest, you can get it as an audiobook from Audible. That means it's available through iTunes and Amazon as well. You can also get the book in paperback through Amazon.com or at BarnesandNoble.com. And Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest is available as an ebook everywhere fine ebooks are sold. Ellie saying that. Everywhere fine ebooks are sold. But, you know, everywhere. It's not just Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble for the Nook.
We're just at Barnes & Noble. Does anybody still have... No. Anyway, but you know, Kobo, pretty much anywhere they sell ebooks, you're going to be able to pick up a copy of this book, Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest. That's all for this week. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.